speaker is Michelle Gonzalez.
Okay, I'll be speaking to you today about greenhouse gas emissions and microbial dynamics in bioenergy crops on retired marginal agricultural fields in the lower Mississippi alluvial valley. This project was supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, and we would like to thank our supporters there. We would also like to thank Kenny Kidd, Stacy Wilson, and Bryce Zimmerman. They were of great assistance in both the data collection and lab analysis. The purpose in this study was we wanted to determine the ability of eastern cottonwood, or Populus deltoides, and switchgrass, Panicum virgatum, to yield cellulosic bioenergy feedstocks on those retired agricultural lands in the lower Mississippi alluvial valley. The reason we took a look at those two crops was because they both have low nutrient and agricultural chemical requirements, and they also have high annual biomass growth rates. We were interested in the lower Mississippi alluvial valley specifically because it was centrally located and it does have a well-developed agricultural infrastructure, including access to rivers and ports and railways, and it also has a long growing season. For switchgrass, eastern cottonwood, and soybean sorghum, which the soybean was used as a comparison, that's the conventional growing, the conventional cropping system in that area. So for those three treatments, we wanted to take a look at the methane, nitrous oxide, and carbon dioxide emission rates. And to do that, all three gases were measured using the static chamber system, and then the CO2 flux was also measured using the LICOR 8100 gas analyzer. We also took a look at the soil microbial biomass carbon, label carbon, and above and below ground carbon. For the study design, we had two study sites along the lower Mississippi alluvial valley. The first one you can see here, in Arkansas at the Rower Research Station, and then we also had one on a private farm in Archibald, Louisiana. We had three treatments, which you'll see at the top. The very top right-hand picture is our cottonwood treatment. The middle picture shows our switchgrass treatment, and then the bottom shows the soybean rotation of the soybean sorghum, or our crop rotation. There were two replications per treatment per site. And for both study sites, all of the soils consisted of poorly drained or somewhat poorly drained soils. So at the Stevenson farm, it consisted of Foley and Gilbert Egypt silt loams. And then at Rower, it consisted of Sharkey and Dacia clays. For the measurements, the static chamber had four samples taken per plot using 20-centimeter collars, and samples were taken at time zero, then 30 minutes later at time 30, and then 60 minutes after that. The samples were analyzed using the gas chromatography method, and then for the LICOR 8100A, we had five samples per plot, and those were 10-centimeter collars, and each of those measurements were taken for 2 minutes at each sample. And you can see below each one is a photo of the sampling process. For the soil, the samples were taken quarterly in tandem with the gas sampling. The label carbon was then assessed using the sequential fumigation incubation method. The microbial biomass carbon was assessed using the fumigation incubation method. And then soil temperature was taken using the K-type thermocouple thermometer. And then soil moisture measurements were taken using the Field Scout TDR 300. Here we have our static chamber monthly CO2 flux trends. You can see at the bottom we have the month and the year that it was sampled, and it's measured in megagrams per hectare per day. In about the June time period of each year, between May and June, we did plant and fertilize our crop treatments, and then we would fertilize the switchgrass. And then in October and November of 2013 is when the cottonwood treatment specifically was harvested. So you can see that it does typically have a higher CO2 trend in the summer months, and then it kind of drops off in the dormant colder months, the winter months. And then you can see it, especially in 2014, you see that jump whenever, especially in the cottonwood and the switchgrass, when they're really starting to pick up and start their good growing rate, start those strong growth rates. And for the static chamber, we did find that it was positively correlated with an R value of 0.121 with the LICOR 8100 system. We found it negatively correlated with soil volumetric water content and positively correlated with soil temperature. Here we have our LICOR 8100A flux trends, and again, it's the same setup. You have the month and year along the bottom, and then it's measured in megagrams per hectare per day. Same setup. And again, it was also negatively correlated with volumetric water content and positively correlated with temperature. And it had a similar trend, only we didn't see that strong spike that we did back here at the static chamber, in the static chamber flux trends. We attributed that to the bigger chamber collar size and the longer sampling period. Here we have the side-by-side comparison of the CO2 flux by each treatment. So on the left-hand side, you'll see the static chamber. On the right-hand side, you have the LICOR. We did have slightly higher values with the LICOR 8100A, but overall, they both produced the same results, with the switchgrass treatment ranking higher than both the crop and the cottonwood treatments. Okay, here we have our annual carbon and our above and below ground biomass for the year of 2013. You can see the fine root carbon is in black, and then we have the red is the coarse root carbon, the green is the residue biomass carbon, and the yellow is the harvested biomass carbon. And you can see at both sites, at Archibald and Rower, the fine root carbon is the highest in that switchgrass treatment. And you can see that CO2 flux was affected by those biomass differences between those treatments. Here we have our monthly methane flux across all sites. And again, at the bottom, we have our month and year of the date of collection. And this is in milligrams per meter squared per day. And again, we planted and fertilized at the same time and harvested at the same time. And we did have a site-by-date by treatment effect found. We found that the spike, especially in July of 2014, did correlate with the planting and site preparation activities that were occurring at that time. Here we have our monthly nitrous oxide flux across our sites. And here we did find a difference in date, but that's all. About 2 weeks before that July, you'll see here that we have switchgrass. The black dot is crop and the red triangle is a switchgrass. You can see right here in the month of July, there was a large spike there, more so than any other month. That sample was actually taken probably about 2 weeks after it had been fertilized. So you can see that the soil disturbance and fertilization would affect that particular measurement more so. Whereas the next year, even though the fertilization occurred about the same time, there was a longer gap between it and the sampling period. Here we have our soil label carbon with our, in black you can see the cottonwood, red is the switchgrass, green is the crop. And in 2013, you see that the switchgrass has the highest label carbon rates. However, in 2014, it changes over to the cottonwood. At the sites, whenever we harvested in 2013, it allowed a large understory to start growing underneath those cottonwood trees when they. So in 2014, in addition to the trees, stump sprouting, there was also a lot of understory vegetation growing as well, which contributed to that soil label carbon. But we do see where in 2014 closely followed those CO2 flux and fine root carbon differences. We also have our fine root carbon here. Black is the crop treatment or the sorghum soy. The red is the switchgrass and the green is the cottonwood at both of our sites. And both sites, both sites followed the same trend as the label carbon and the above and below ground biomass. The switchgrass did have the highest fine root carbon at both sites. And the switchgrass fine roots were also a likely major contributor of that label carbon. For our soil microbial biomass carbon, we found that the Rower site followed those trends of label carbon for 2013, fine root carbon, and above and below ground biomass, whereas Archibald, the cottonwood treatment, was actually higher than the other two. Again, could be attributed there was a lot of additional vegetation that came back, especially at the Archibald site, whenever we harvested those trees. For here we have our carbon budgets for 2009 through 2013. We have our soil carbon in black, our below ground carbon in red, and then in green we have our above ground carbon. Yellow is the actual the carbon that was produced by the machinery during harvesting and management practices. So we did find a positive balance for all crops. The cottonwood had 55.7 megagrams carbon per hectare, followed by switch at 42.5, then crop at 36.4. So the soil did have the largest carbon pool, and more machinery emissions were used for the crop and less for the cottonwood. In conclusion, we did find slight variations in the CO2 flux measurements for both the static chamber method and the Licor 8100 gas analyzer, but both of them found the same result in that the switchgrass had the highest CO2 flux. The differences in the length of sampling time are likely the cause of the differences in the two methods. As far as the label carbon and the biomass carbon, those did influence the carbon dioxide flux rates. Switchgrass had the highest biomass, which is likely to have contributed to it having the highest CO2 flux. The greater fine root biomass was associated with the higher label carbon at both sites. And then at Rower, the higher label carbon in the switchgrass treatment supported higher microbial biomass carbon. No treatment differences were found in the nitrous oxide flux rates, but we did find that fertilization did cause a shortfall.